Hello. Welcome back, y'all. Thank you for tuning in to this final chapter of Polypsych 101. It has been really fun and moving for me to do this art project, to speak psychologically about the politics of our day leading up to the most important election of our time, where you really need an integrated psychological lens to understand what we're living through. Otherwise, it's just not clear to people. That's because the behaviors of the Mad King are not political in their origin. They're psychological. And, to be exact, psychopathological. Like a lot of people, I never particularly was drawn to politics until this severely mentally ill man was picked by our society to rule. It says something about us, the leaders we pick. We'll see how history judges us. Maybe we'll get lucky, and in 100 years from now, during the next global pandemic, they'll say, oh, back then, being malignantly narcissistic was considered normal. No one thought it was a problem. May we be so evolved 100 years from now. 4 years ago, after the last election, not only did I begin a deep dive into the observable behavioral patterns of Donald Trump, which we'll revisit in light of the New World Order, I rewatched Dr. Strangelove several times and began to see what the artist Stanley Kubrick saw, that when a system, any system, is so baseline insane, we don't even recognize insanity, even when it's so blatant and so dangerous. And it's hilarious in the movie version, but terrifying in real life for so many millions of people who've been living in abject terror for 4 fucking years. And it's over. It's over. History tells us many accounts of mentally deranged people claiming and clinging to power. Just never thought I'd live through any of them. Remember Napoleon's Reign of Terror? Anyone looking to go back to that? Or Ivan the Terrible? Any of the Mad Kings in the Ming Dynasty? What about any of those King Henrys? Trump is not the first Mad King, but I hope he'll be the last. This seems pretty avoidable in a working democracy. By just knowing what's basically good from what's basically bad, we can avoid this in 4 years when either Donald or Donald Jr. decides to run. It's not from unintelligence that we miss these traits, but from not knowing how to read something in our environment that requires deeper ways of knowing. You don't need a degree in psychology, but we do need to have our emotional intelligence turned on in order to detect these malignant threats to us and our loved ones. There are 4 ways of knowing, according to Carl Jung. 4 ways of knowing: thinking, feeling, sensing, and intuiting. Our culture is a thinking function dominant society. We value and practice logic and reason. We form our systems along these lines. Science and reason are really the bright spots in the thinking function. The shadow side is that logic can lead us astray. Logic can be used to rationalize and justify horrible atrocities. The fruits of our thinking function, our thoughts, are not generally considered to be particularly accurate or wise, and they can be easily manipulated without our ever being the wiser. Our feeling function is less understood and less valued and practiced, but our emotions give us good and useful information about our internal experience. Not particularly accurate about the outer world, our feeling function helps us gather data and know our inner worlds. Through our body's sensate function, we can sense all kinds of subtle information. Have you ever sat next to someone and it just felt great somehow to be next to them? Not necessarily rational or emotional, just sensed in the body a feeling of good to be near them. Or been somewhere that you sensed a feeling of bad. I was once walking to my car late at night in the parking structure at Cedars-Sinai. I sensed something of a threat in my body, and I looked around, saw a man walking toward the elevator that I was waiting at. Before logic or reason or emotion had a chance to chime in, my body's sensate intelligence said, run. And I did. I bolted up the stairs, looked back only to see the man stop dead in his tracks. He looked stunned and jilted, and I kept running to my car. Once I was safely distant and secure, I had the thought, what the fuck was that? Only then I had a feeling of worry and insecurity and a sadness that came over me. If I had waited to know what this guy was up to by relying on either my thinking function or my feeling function, I'd have been sunk. Luckily, the sensory intelligence is light quick. Similarly, the intuition function is super fast and super accurate. The trick is to make a mental connection with your guts, your intuition, and practice feeling into your wisdom centers. Our bodies have built a lot of intelligence over the millennia. They are smarter than our conscious minds, which have only been awake for a few decades. And our bodies know how to do way more cool stuff. In our culture, we predominantly teach kids to engage their thinking functions so they learn to use that avenue of intelligence. Imagine what happens when kids are taught to use their whole brains, not just their frontal lobes or their lopsided left brains. Brain cells run throughout the whole body. There's brain cells in the hearts, brain cells in our bellies, neurons that run all the way down our trunks. So by becoming more integrated with our intelligence, we can cross-check how we feel with what we know. Cross-check our thoughts with our deepest wisdom centers. Sense our way in the world with a little more grace, without quite as much damage. Human beings detached from our bodies, cut off from our emotional intelligence, do a lot of damage. We're like a ship without a rudder. We run off course. You know, I learned to paddleboard during pandemic. It's been one of the best things during this time. Get out into nature, paddle away from people and from COVID, be one with the winds and tides. And there's this little piece of plastic I have to attach to my board. It's a fin. It's only like a few inches long. Seems like you probably don't really need it. Until I went out in the water one day without it. It was the strangest thing. The board, without this little fin, becomes almost a hazard in the ocean. No control, no steering, no grounding. This stupid little piece of plastic acts as the rudder and keeps me in line and on track, enjoying the sea turtle of water sports. Seems like a small thing, like you don't really need it, but actually, this little fin is essential. And so it is with things like empathy or EQ or intuition. Might seem like a small thing, like you don't need it, but actually, it's essential for guidance and well-being. Which is why we've evolved with all these ways of knowing in the world, because it's an advantage. Our feelings, sensations, and intuitions are not less important than our thinking function, but they are devalued in our culture, unpracticed, and there is a strong bias against them and in favor of reason. There's light sides and shadow sides to each way of knowing. None are complete on their own. In therapy, I try to engage people's inferior functions and strengthen them. Helps people navigate with a rudder and increases happiness. So Wednesday morning, after the election, I woke up, and before I reached for my phone to see what all the math and human thinking would yield, I checked in with the other ways of knowing, just to see what I could see. I tried to focus on my body's sensate intelligence in particular, to see what the body had to say about what it could sense was happening. I didn't yet intellectually know what it meant, but I sensed a change, a lightening, a layer removed. Maybe you felt it too. I checked in with my feelings as well. They were definitively different than 4 years ago. As I worked through the day, I checked in with my clients. They were also feeling very different than last election. 4 years ago, people all over the country felt sideswiped, hit from the side by a Mac-10 truck. My office was like a trauma ward 4 years ago, which is why I began my deep dive into the psychopathology of Donald Trump. But on Wednesday, after this election, people felt okay. They were making coffee, checking 538 and Twitter, and being relatively normal, not traumatized. We were all braced for the same 2016 nightmare to happen again, but the same thing hadn't happened again, and it was only perceptible by the feeling function and the sensate function. The findings of the thinking function would be 4 agonizing days away. And if you were relying on that tabulation, it was a slog. But if you began to integrate reason, logic, feeling, sensing, and intuiting, the picture became clear right away. It's one of the things I love about psychology. It lets you see around corners at times. It's not a crystal ball by any means, but developing the mind does mean you get to understand quicker. Stuff isn't as baffling when you have insight, awareness, and understanding. Integrated intelligence is just part of EQ and can be taught to kids and adults. My instinct is that the lessons of 2020 are absolutely being taught to all of us. And at least the kids coming up in all of this will know better next time around. For the adults, let's paint an emotionally intelligent picture. In terms of knowing, we had a full blueprint of Trump's behaviors from 40 years of his public life. Nothing he's done in office has deviated from his basic blueprint, which we discussed in episode 2, The Cost of Emotional Illiteracy. So, if we wanted to know, it was knowable then, and it's knowable now. I didn't intellectually know all the facts before he was elected, but they were all there. The details of the divorces, the details of the family life, his business relations, the way he conducts himself. The bankruptcies alone tell the whole story. I wish we'd known that prior to last election. I think if we as a culture had understood his financials, these 4 years could have been avoided. Reasonable people, thinking function intact, if they looked at the numbers, could have made a healthier selection. In Chinese medicine, all of health boils down to 2 realms. There's the money realm and the love realm. Money is more than just money in business. It's all that we value. And love is more than just romantic love. It's all the relationships in the connection realm. We know about Donald's love realm, mostly transactional relationships, exploitative, manipulative, somewhat shallow agreements. We saw his transactional relationship with Fox News take a turn on election night when Fox called Arizona. Donald called up his old friend Rupert Murdoch and to take it down. And unlike any other time in the past decade, Rupert said no. So that spoke volumes about his relationships once he's no longer holding power, not a friend in sight. Between his 26 accusations of sexual misconduct, rape, and sexual assault, the divorces, all the affairs, the blackmailing through all the prostitution, his close relations with Jeffrey Epstein, God bless, but not a picture of health in the love realm. Looking at Donald's money, it seems he was right. There was good reason to hide his taxes and financial disclosures. According to the latest report in Forbes from October 2020, he owes over $1 billion in debt today. Over $1 billion in debt for one human being. That makes him highly hookable, by the way. Owing people money internationally means they have leverage over him. And the president of the United States shouldn't be in that compromised position. I don't care whose team you're on. It's not great for national security. And also, it shows a kind of dangerous level of incompetence that could damage the U.S. But think about it. He was born into billions and still manages to owe billions. What does that tell you about his rate of consumption and destruction? Just over the past 20 years, he's filed 6 bankruptcies. That means every 3 years or so, he grinds one of his grandiose delusions into the ground, like his fake university or failed casino or catastrophic presidential term, because he's very unstable. And while his money protects him from grave consequences, the failures still amass and the harms still accumulate. Also in the money realm, besides bankruptcies, is lawsuits. Some 3,500 lawsuits in one life. Can you imagine? And I don't know if that number includes his most recent batch of lawsuits against states that didn't vote for him. People with Trump's cluster B, cluster buck of a personality profile are often litigious as they try to make the world go according to their irrational will. It's sad to watch this play out in the real world and so wasteful. And it's why I am suggesting that people with this kind of stuff going on in the money realm shouldn't be president, in my opinion, regardless of whether they have an R or a D after their name, or if their hats are red or blue, who cares? These traits are simply not appropriate for the commander-in-chief. And I think on some level, we all know that somewhere inside of us. In a working democracy, people who are seeking power over other people need to be checked. And they need to be decent, at the very least. They can't be destructive, impulsive, or delusional. They got to be reasonable and able to be reasoned with. We can argue policy till the cows come home, but what is basically good for people shouldn't be a political divide, in my opinion. Having Joe and Kamala at the helm may not be everyone's perfect policy pair, but they're decent. They're basically good. Joe's not great. He's not perfect. He wasn't my horse in the primary. There were so many other interesting candidates who didn't have 8 complaints against him for touching women inappropriately. One of the allegations is about actual sexual assault, so that's not great. The other 7 women said that the nature of the inappropriate touch did not amount to assault. Rather, they felt that he invaded their personal space and touched them inappropriately, and because he held more power than all of them, they all felt powerless to stop the unwanted touch. So it's not great, but it's better. It's better with Biden. That should have been the slogan. Not great, but better with Biden. And beyond Biden, Kamala serves as a beacon of strength and dignity and inspires hope in billions of people. Little girls all over the globe are changed by this event. This is deeply good for humans. You know who else will be good for humans, I think? Doug. The first, second husband. Doug. I think it will be good for toxic masculinity to see a man in a loving, supportive role, to get over that need to dominate or the fear of being upstaged or whatever that is. It will be good for men and good for us all to absorb some of that. I'm also looking forward to Jill. She's a teacher and an adult. I can't wait. Can't wait for our country to value teachers and education and adults. That will be good. And I want to be gentle about this contrast, but obviously Mike Pence does not inspire hope around the globe. Give me a break. This is a greater good here. And poor Melania looks to be an extremely unhappy person with grotesque values. And while Jill may not be perfect, she seems happy, purposeful, more fulfilled. She's not scowling constantly. This will all be better for humans from an energetic perspective. I'm curious, actually, to see how all of this subtle sensory information starts to feel in the next few weeks and months and into the post-pandemic era. Did you guys notice empathy on the victory board at Biden's speech? Can you feel it? Energy top down, flowing with empathy. Even if you don't think that people who make over $400,000 a year should pay a dime more in taxes, or even if you don't agree with a government takeover of medicine, even if you like some of Trump's policies but couldn't stand his personality, even if, we still all benefit from empathy at the top, decency at the top, perhaps some normal age-related cognitive decline from the top, instead of grave and dangerous mental illness that we were all living under. It's still a better road than the one we were on from a psychological perspective. Better for humans overall. Certainly better possibilities for climate change than under a regime that denies everything about reality, including the devastating pace of global warming. Better possibilities for COVID suffering for the very same reason that at least this administration is not severely mentally deranged and delusional and is willing and able to face the fact that COVID is a global pandemic and needs to be taken seriously by serious people and scientists. This shouldn't be political. This should be basic. Better possibilities for people of color, because again, at least they're willing to name and face the ugly truth about racial trauma in our country. With the Mad King at the helm, everything is a hoax, which is actually called telegraphing, by the way. He's telling you everything in him is a hoax, but it's projected out onto the world. He always telegraphs, often by calling something a hoax. The news is a hoax. There was the Russia hoax, the COVID hoax, and now the mail-in ballot hoax. The common denominator, of course, is him. Him and his fraudulent hoax of an existence. I know we've all been wondering when and how this would end. Honestly, I didn't place much hope in our broken electoral system or election officials or hundreds of millions of voters. I didn't know what to think going into this election, but I knew in other ways that this had to end. And this is another advantage to understanding archetypal psychology, because psyche is ancient and truth is eternal. The ancient myth of Narcissus, for example, tells the story of a boy who stares too long at his own reflection in the water, falls in, and drowns. We know this will happen, but how and when? The archetypal snake oil salesman peddles bullshit, travels town to town, and succeeds in conning people because they don't know him and because by the time they do, he's off to the next town. That certainly was Trump's pattern pre-presidency, and it served him well, moving project to project, slapping his name on buildings, then pulling out, filing bankruptcies, and leaving a wake of devastation behind him as he moved on to the next con. But I think that's exactly where he got caught, in the intersection of these two inevitable tales. The narcissist, obsessed with his own image and power, got stuck in Washington for too long. He stayed longer than the 3 years, which historically, according to his financials, predicts a collapse for poor Mr. Trump. Every three-ish years, a collapse. And then, exactly 1 month before the most important election of our time, the snake oil salesman drank his own snake oil and got terribly sick and almost died, and had to be helicoptered to a hospital. And everyone saw it. On some level, people knew what that meant. It was the first bit of reality testing we saw be effective in almost 4 years, no matter how crazy he had acted. There never seemed to be a consequence. Now, finally, 1 month till the election, there began a trace of reality coming back online. You could sense it. Mother Nature was more powerful than Donald Trump's delusions of grandeur. And now we're seeing everyone who drinks his COVID poison gets sick, probably from going to super spreader campaign events. And many of them will die. For every 100,000 new cases daily, at least 1,000 of them will die. It's very sad and also very avoidable. We're seeing his flock, highly suggestible, getting riled up about the illegal votes and how really, if you count the legal votes, he won. Reading through his Twitter, despite a lack of evidence and even in the face of mounting evidence to the contrary, the Mad King was claiming victory in all of the battleground states, even while votes were being counted and, frankly, tallying up for Joe Biden. There's that pesky narcissistic delusion again and again, grandiose about his popularity or accomplishments, and woefully persecuted when his delusional bubble bursts. This is needless suffering, and I'm glad that it's over. There's a lot in our society today about being hookable, becoming hooked by your emotions and beliefs. As a psychology nerd, I'll just say, it's your brain. Don't let people manipulate you with your emotions, your beliefs, and values. I see so many people being hooked by their emotional illiteracy, not being able to read their own emotions or the emotions of others accurately. On both sides, we all have keywords that push our justice buttons and hook us. Think about the QAnon crowd. All you have to say is pedophile or Democrat, and you got them. On the left, we have keywords like racism or oppression that can hook a brain very easily. Think about the people right now who are holding signs in protest of an election that was predicted to go this way and then went this way. 3 million more people voted against him last time, and almost 5 million more people voted against him this time. It is so non-mysterious. Yet all someone has to do is go on Fox News and say, legal votes. And it incites people's paranoia and distrust. Although never seems to make them distrust the messenger, just mistrust whomever the messenger sends you to. Careful, we can be emotionally played like a violin. It is so easy to manipulate good people because people want to believe. People want to be good and fight pedophilia and election corruption and racism. It's not hard to hook people. Harder to get them unhooked, much harder to get someone to unhook from an idea than it is to implant an idea. Brainwash is very simple. Just by mere suggestion and repetition does an idea become implanted. So be careful what you plug into. Ideas are contagious. I hope going forward in our culture, we can talk about media literacy along with emotional literacy. These tragic wastes of precious time could be avoided with just a little information. After all, when people know better, they do better. One of the main reasons I wanted to make this podcast was to try and have open, emotionally intelligent conversations with my mentors in order to grow the therapeutic net beyond private practice and try to help people develop a psychologically integrated lens to see through what's going on in our world. I've benefited tremendously in my own life by gaining psychological insight and understanding, and I'm honored to serve others in this capacity and watch them flourish. Of course, I want that for my country and for my world. Emotional intelligence is like a fancy type of fertilizer. You know, plants are like people. They're resilient and can grow whether or not they're well cared for. But when plants are given better nutrients in the soil, better music in the air, better ratios of water and sunlight. Then the plants grow better. They're healthier, more resilient. Plants grow better with better nutrients. And humans grow better when they're better nourished as well. I think of EQ as that growth enhancer. I was very fortunate that my dad was willing and able to pay for my psychological education for years when I was coming of age. And now that he's coming of age, I'm very tickled to be able to give back a little of what I've learned and how I've come to understand healing in the world and how to navigate in ways that benefit my happiness and the happiness of others. I'm particularly excited to be able to offer this free podcast to anyone who has been suffering through all this madness. I know so many people who have felt incredibly unsafe and a tiny bit nuts in the Trump era. What I hoped to do here is appeal to anyone interested in having a deeper discussion beyond the talking points, beyond the vitriol, beyond all that polarizing crap, and get to the core of what's been going on and see through some of the haze, seeing what prevents us from seeing through the haze, what mechanisms in the mind cause us to block out certain, perhaps vital bits of information, which styles of denial we favor, and at what cost. History will show what it's shown before, that dangerous human beings like the Mad King come to power because people rationalize and justify and emotionally cut off from important data their bodies are designed to process. And when we do that, terrible things can happen. This is the cost of our emotional illiteracy. Now, we'll watch as the Mad King attempts to tear down and abuse the very system he was sent to fix. Watch your wallets, everybody. I suspect this will be the grift of a lifetime. When Trump was elected 4 years ago, I wrote down in my notebook, the Great Uniter. I thought he would like being called that, and I thought people will somehow unite, perhaps through their shared revulsion against his darkness. And wow, 4 years later, we all came together to vote him out, even in Georgia. I remember seeing a photo from a few weeks after Trump's inaugural. It was a young white man from Wisconsin holding a sign that said, "I'm sorry, I didn't realize." And ever since that moment in 2017, people have been waking up and uniting for good. Most people didn't vote for him in 2016. Many people who did quickly realized the harms that they didn't foresee. Throughout his term, his disapproval rating grew and grew. And many more people voted against this malignant man this time around. Because most people, according to all the data out there, really don't want to see America led by a racist, sexist pig. And this was knowable all along, somewhere inside us. We just didn't know how to process that and had to go the long way. That's okay. Wisconsin tipped back to decency, as did Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Arizona. And I hope we all will in time. I'm about to go into therapy with my mentor, Dr. Erica Ellis. We had initially recorded a lovely conversation a month ago about brainwash and hookability, but like everything in the age of the Mad King, the chaos level is considerable, and a month goes by, and the whole picture changes. Now we're here, 1 week post-election, and it's a brave new world. And I have a lot of pent-up emotions that need to process. For anyone who likes documentaries, there's a few out now about cults and brainwash, like the NXIVM stories and the Scientology fiasco. I think it speaks to our time, how easy it is to get hooked by what seems like a good idea. There's also that new one called The Social Dilemma, about the tech folks who created all the social media technology, how they knew what was addictive and hooking to people, funded only those projects for profit. There's an interesting guy named Tristan Harris, who's the chief technology ethicist at Google and founded an organization called the Center for Humane Technology. He essentially blew the whistle on the tech world and said, "We're just as bad as the cigarette companies. We got to do better." I've been tracking it since about 2004 when Facebook began to explode. It's an important aspect of our mental health and something I think is nonpartisan, somewhere reasonable people can convene toward what is basically good for humans. And raising consciousness about healthy tech relationships, media savviness, and our highly suggestible brains seems like it's on us to do, since generationally, we are the elders. And we need to develop some wisdom about this. Maybe in a season two, we would dive deeper into brain hooking. In this season, given all the mental health crises we're facing, I'm just going to open up the conversation and hope to raise some consciousness on how our brains are easily hookable, even before technology advanced a trillion times in 50 years. Even before that, we were hookable, and people with all kinds of intentions could hook us. In the digital age, it's just now even easier to hook us if we're not really using our whole brains. Anyway, there's reason to celebrate the good, and I hope we all have. There's also a season of healing I hope we usher in with our families. On that road to healing, we can't just bypass the pain. We got to go through it. I don't know about you, but after 4 years of bracing and tension and our world being on the brink of disaster, I have some real grief to shed now that it's over. So with that, I bring you a clip from therapy in case it helps. Hi, Erica.
Hello.
How you guys doing over there?
We're good. It's almost like suddenly having a lot of food after a famine.
I've been feeling pretty good, but today I had a down day. I don't know what all the emotions that are processing through us after this complex thing. Jeez.
Yeah. What are you hoping for us to talk about, like, podcast-wise?
Can we talk about my dad and I?
Yeah, let's talk about you and your dad.
Well, the biggest, I guess, conflict that I feel is, on one hand, I really want to heal and repair and be okay. But, you know, like we talked about last time, you can't just spiritually bypass all of your emotions and just arrive at healing and okayness. I'm still just processing my anger and disappointment that in the history books, my dad will go down with siding with that guy. Like, the history books are going to tell that story more accurately than Fox News has been telling that story. Mm-hmm. And my dad is going to be this guy who only received information from one place, didn't even know what kind of information he was getting, and was so, in my opinion, indoctrinated into the cult of personality at Fox News that he believes them more than he believes me.
Yeah.
He believes them more than he believes, like, other Jews in his community, or like more than like all the doctors who have gone on the record and said, like, no, Trump, all the Republicans who have said, no, never, all the people. He is so dug in and will go down. And history, he probably did it twice. I mean, I can't even talk to him about it, but I'm on one hand, like, wanting healing and also processing just, yeah, like, anger and disappointment and sadness. I feel ashamed and embarrassed, to be honest. Some of the, like,
that you're, what's the shame and embarrassment?
You know, the part of me that, I mean, I don't know how this will all look through the lens of time, but it does kind of seem today like there's a lot of bias and kind of unchecked prejudices. And I don't know. I just feel like if you're lining up with that guy at this point, you're just not, I don't know. It's just hard for me to, it's hard. It's very, that's why I'm here. I actually need a little help here. This is where I'm stuck.
Yeah. Well, the first thing we have to sort of discern here is you are not lining up with that. Your father is lining up with that, and you are not your father. like the first untethering here is a little bit of codependency. It kind of reminds me in relationships where people are like, oh, my boyfriend chews with his mouth open. It's so embarrassing. And you're like, well, that's your boyfriend, you know, like it's not you. That so we have to first untangle the bits where we think our parents or our partners or our loved ones are the reflections of us, you know, and we can't make that distinction. The worthy part of looking at has more to do with just the hurt feelings over that disconnect. That's a different thing. And I would make, I mean, obviously, you know, I'm not a Trump supporter. In fact, quite the opposite, but I would venture to guess that everything you just said about your dad and how indoctrinated he is into Fox News and that he would choose to believe Fox News over you is like a viable argument that the other side is making about liberal people. You know, they're so indoctrinated to these other news outlets, to the New York Times and Washington Post and wherever else, that they're not even listening to their family members.
But that's not an actual parallel. That's very frustrating. I know it is, but it's like those aren't parallel institutions with parallel values and parallel business plans. So there's no actual parallel there. But yes, you're right. People are saying, aren't they just the same? But no, they're not.
They're not parallel, like from that intellectual vantage point of what the values are. But and again, I'm taking devil's advocate on this point because I think part of what we're trying to do here is bridge understanding. But I do think there's parallels here in terms of the emotional process that's underlying why people support different value systems. And I think a lot of people support Trump because there is a lot of underlying fear, a lot of underlying existential fear. You know, for some people, racism and bigotry at its core is, I don't know if there will be a place for me if we include others. They don't have a sort of space or template in their mind for cooperation, for expansion, for inclusiveness. So what they might be processing is like, oh, if I include all these other people, do I become irrelevant, you know? And I think that's, it takes a more empowered, cooperative person to understand, no, you don't. And in fact, you know, there's this whole idea in complexity theory that like the more complex a system is, the more stable a system is. But that's a complex theory that most people don't get. So I think what we're really dealing with is like a very, very visceral survival instinct for a lot of people of like, I don't feel safe. And here's this guy telling me a bunch of things that at a superficial level make me feel safer. And I'm not going to question any of those things. I'm certainly not fact checking him. Because I don't want to fact check him. I want what he says to be true.
I mean, that's the thing. It's just like, I don't know, like, come on. Like right now. So I watch, by the way, I watch a little Fox News. I watch a little ABC News. I'd like to see what people are watching. Because I think the problem is the 24-hour news cycle writ large is a problem. And I think any one news source, you get pretty indoctrinated pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. I like to keep it moving, but I'm just right now there's a narrative on Fox News that there's these machines and these machines made the Trump votes call Biden votes in Michigan. It's these machines with this glitch and they're all using the word like glitch and machine. And they just keep saying it over and over again because that's how you brainwash people. You just introduce something that has no actual bearing in reality, and you repeat it enough times, and voila, brainwash.
Yep.
And it's happening now, and it is not a new business model.
Yep.
It's been happening for all these years, and that's what's tough, I think, in some of the reckoning that's coming up. I've been watching, have you seen that documentary series about the NXIVM cult?
Oh my God.
Have you
It's so good, but it started giving me such horrible nightmares that we vowed not to watch it before bed anymore. It's so painful.
It's very easy to brainwash people. It's very easy to get hooked. you and I were initially, we're going to have a whole conversation about hookability. That was going to be the topic of this topic, but now it seems irrelevant.
I don't really know that it is irrelevant. I mean, a lot has changed and also not a lot has changed. All the work is still in front of us in terms of hookability. And I guess what I'm saying is, like, I think hookability is largely a function of people not feeling safe, fundamentally not feeling safe. And so they get hooked on things that in some ways give them the illusion of grounding, inclusion, stability, whatever. And I don't know that the sort of Trump brainwashing and Trump base is that much different than that.
Ultimately, it just feels inclusive to whoever feels included by it.
There, people are hearing rhetoric that sounds familiar to them or validating to them and makes them in some way feel safer. They're not questioning it deeper because they don't want to be stable, destabilized. And that can happen. I think Trump's base sort of touches into lots of different realms, ranging from people who are looking for financial stability and are choosing to ignore other aspects of Trump's platform because listening to him will support their own financial intentions. I think it supports people who are xenophobic because they're scared of their own relevance. So let's listen to this guy who's, you know, on our side.
Yeah.
Anyway, I think there's lots of threads of that. I think he's sort of hitting into lots of threads of that. But fundamentally, I think what we're talking about is people don't feel safe.
So and like, there's no solution, right? Like, what if my father doesn't feel safe? So he goes for this guy, and going for this guy means someone like me can't feel safe. Then how do we ever get out of that cycle of, like, terrorizing each other?
I don't know. I'm just sitting with that a sec. I don't have a quick answer to that. Hang on.
I have no answers.
I'm playing something out in my mind, a thought, and I'm wondering if it's true. I can say it out loud, but I'm thinking about people doing things to make themselves feel safe at the expense of someone else is oppression. People doing things that make themselves feel safe that is not at the expense of other people is empowerment. And I guess the part I'm sitting with is, like, are we, I mean, I think the opposite position is obvious here, that, like, Trump's regime and base are definitely doing things that are oppressing other people. That's no question. Are we as liberals, progressive Democrats, non-Trump supporters, is what we're doing to glean safety oppressing other people? Or I guess that's what I'm sitting with, what I'm wondering. Like, are we just doing what we consider a more pro-social version of something that lands exactly the same way to the other side?
Right. Like, that's how it lands to their side, is that our version of saying, please be decent to people. Let's retire a certain set of words that aren't helpful. Let's retire a certain set of ideas or brands of syrup or whatever that just don't really match for where we're at today. And that feels oppressive. If someone can't have their syrup, that would feel oppressive. If someone said, you know what, let's maybe change the statues away from Civil War slave fighters to something else, like, that would feel oppressive to that side. And it's like, I don't know how to square that, like, asking you to not be oppressive is the same as being oppressive, but that is how it seems to land.
Yeah.
And my dad sent me an editorial about, you know, from that perspective, how all the Senate races and in between things that went largely Republican or didn't go full blue wave or whatever means that while we all agree that Trump is inappropriate, what it also says is that no one wants that Democratic agenda of sort of behavioral control and thought control because they feel like that is oppressive to them. Don't tell us we can't say certain words or behave in certain ways that are offensive. We don't want to hear that.
Yeah.
And that's offensive, you know, and that's oppressive to them. So it's like, I don't know how to have, it's like, how there's not.
Yeah, well, it's a bit deeper of like, don't threaten my privilege. I'm not interested in dismantling that, and nor do I even have any idea what that means.
I think that's
The one thing I'm struck by, and I'm in this conversation, I'm efforting to take a tact of devil's advocate here against you, so that we can try and have a more balanced, compassionate understanding of both sides of this. But one thing that strikes me, and I say that because I had no way, it's not where my personal views are, but I think, like, especially as therapists, we have to be able to toggle between those positions to sort of broaden our circle of understanding here. And I guess part of what I'm sitting with is like, the progressive viewpoint does want to eradicate all kinds of painful isms that we just think would be better. But it's not as if we're not filled with hate and spite towards the people who are using them. We are. So like, you got to call a spade. There's a lot of hate on both sides here.
Uh-huh.
You know, I mean, I thought it was actually really big of Biden and Harris to orient their message to inclusion and belonging and sort of governing in a way that's united, because I think the reality of like the emotions that are beneath the surface here is that like everyone's pretty pissed at each other in general. And I think, like, I don't know, what I feel like I hear from the Republican side is like, Democrats and progressives think they're better than everyone else. They think they're better. And all of that better ideology is still laced with the same judgment and hatred and, you know, disconnection as the other side. And, you know, we can say like, yeah, but we're also doing things that are good for people. We want to eradicate horrible, antiquated practices that oppressed people that are still in existence today. We want to try and do things that make everyone healthy and safe, but we're still all doing that with a lot of judgment. And I think that's like, at the end of the day, it's almost like the judgment and the hatred that get translated beyond the actual policy messages or even social justice messages beneath that. I think that's where we're getting stuck a lot, that people are needing, you know, to circle back to your initial question at hand of like, what do we do? I think in myself, what I feel is like, how much self-compassion can I develop? How much collective compassion can I develop in myself? How much compassion can I develop for other viewpoints without giving way to viewpoints that are insidious and damaging? You know what it reminds me of? Actually, I just am thinking about something in the psychotherapy process. I don't know if this is a model that you ever use, but I work a lot with like inner children as a theory, which is like, we have younger parts of us that are stuck somewhere in our development. They need empathy and they need compassion. And when we work with those parts, we're thinking about like, oh man, my six-year-old self that was left at the bus stop, that part feels so sad and is having such a hard time. What does that part of me need? Okay, that part needs comfort and reassurance that it's going to be okay, or whatever it is, right? And we have to do that actually for healing. We have to do that with a bunch of parts of ourselves. However, there's this other voice, and that's just like a critical naysaying voice of the ego that says horrible, insidious things. And that part should not be comforted and should not be sort of supported and listened to. Like, for healing, you got to sort of know the difference of like, oh, this is a wounded part of me that can benefit from comfort. And oh no, this is just like an insidious voice that I'm going to turn away from. And I feel like we're threading that needle as a society, you know, it's like trying to figure out like, where are the voices of disenfranchised people on the other side that actually need healing and need some support? And where are the aspects of that viewpoint that just should be turned away from, like cannot be tolerated?
So this is like my thesis, sort of, is that this is not unintelligence, but it is emotional illiteracy. And like, how can we bring emotional literacy. That this shouldn't ever have been a political contest. This is the rules would be the same regardless of whose team this malignancy played on. It's just about recognizing malignancy and not discounting it. People who, like my dad, who said, oh yeah, I heard him, I didn't like it. I saw it, I didn't like it. But he developed like wishful thinking that he just hoped that would get better, but didn't have any relationship with the harm that was being done. And I'm trying to bring a lot of compassion. The place where I can enter the compassion zone with my dad is like, he's a man of a certain generation and he's a doctor and he's had all the fucking emotion drilled out of him by whatever toxic masculinity was doing in the 50s and 60s and whatever medicine was doing to make doctors emotionally cut off, which is not the same as emotionally intelligent. And so I can enter compassion zone. I'm just having a hard time kind of with just lining up in history with that guy is just tough. But you're right. It's kind of his thing, not mine. I guess I need to let go of that. That's totally his thing.
Yeah. I mean, I think the less personally we take our loved ones, the better off we are in general. But I do think about this, like this thing I'm saying about we need to thread the needle of compassion and sort of drawing the line. We need to do that in ourselves for healing. And now we need to sort of do it as a society. And like one really good model around that is when I think about people who are getting sober from an addiction is like, it's the model is like, you have to get sober. There is no halfway to getting sober. And we're going to cut that behavior and that avenue of behavior off altogether, right? But beyond that, there's a lot of space for compassion around the stories and the experiences that built up to that addiction taking place, you know? And the discernment between those things, like, well, like, so in the case of your dad, let me say, it's like, you could hold a line of like, I can't get on board with the behavior of voting for Trump. It's injurious to me, you know? But I can hold space for you to share your own narrative of how you came to align with those values, about what happened for you, without the judgment of like, God, what happened for you? But really, what happened for you? What was your life story that came about and led you to aligning with this? And there is where I think there could be healing and understanding.
I have to work on the judgment.
Yeah, we all have to work on the judgment.
Can I say something that's been rattling in my head, driving me crazy, and is not helping anyone?
Yeah.
There's this, oh, so stupid. So like, ironically, my dad insisted in his life to like put my brother and I in like Jewish education. So like, we've been very Jewishly educated. And one of the things is like from all the Holocaust, I mean, like I've been to Poland. I've seen death camp. Like I've been like, they invested in this experience in us. Every fucking Holocaust museum all over the goddamn country we've been to. And there's this poem that you often come across. It's like, first they came for the socialists and I didn't speak out because I was not a socialist. And then they came for the trade unionists and I did not speak out because I was not a trade unionist. Then they came for the Jews and I did not speak out because I was not a Jew. Then they came for me and there was no one left to speak for me. Anyway, it's printed fucking everywhere. And I always have like an echo of that in my head. Like when they came for blah, 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 and I didn't say anything, this is how this shit happens. And I just feel like it's hard for me that my dad, like, he was like, yeah, it's tough that he did all that to those people, but it didn't move the needle for him. It didn't, like, he doesn't click in that, like, that's how bad things happen. And you paid for me to have this education about, like, never forget and, like, be righteous. And then, like, come on. I know it's not rational, but that is how it feels. I'm trying not to bring it to him, but it's just, it means I can't go near him right now. I can't go near him. I can't talk to him. I can't look at him. He can't hold space for my feeling a mess. And I can't even deal with his fucking willful, dug in kind of choice to be just, I don't know, whatever. His choices. They're his choices. They're not mine. I wish it didn't hit me like that. Like betrayal of our lives and our values, but it does. And again, I somehow it must hit him like I'm betraying his values or something. I don't know how to deal. I just don't know how to deal.
Have you spoken with him?
No. We've done some light texting. I think just trying to keep it light and polite or something, you know? But I mean,
what does light texting look like after this? Like,
the last thing I think I texted him was like, I love you. And I think he just didn't text back, to be honest. I was like, okay, that's great.
Yeah, that doesn't sound like light texting. It sounds like strained texting to me. It's a different thing. I feel like you're sharing the story of so many right now, you know?
I've heard the story so many times from people.
Yeah, me too. It's sort of, it feels like it's hitting on two prongs, both for you and for the people that I'm hearing the story from. One of them is, I don't know how to connect with this person. And this person being my mother, father, sister, loved one, partner. And there is like an excruciating grief to that. That rather than people grieving, they just get mad about, because the grief is like, yeah. And the other one, which I think you're getting at here, I think that it's creating an identity problem for people to feel like, this is my parent who raised me, and how could we be this misaligned? How could our values be that far apart? I feel like one of the things you know, are implicitly asking is like, okay, great, what do I do with my dad now? And I think there's a lot of people, as you're saying, that might be listening and thinking that. And I guess I keep coming back to this compassion for healing thing, and that begins with self-compassion. So giving yourself space to have the emotions you have about this without feeling like, you know, by Tuesday afternoon, you're going to need to come around and figure out how to reconnect. Just feel it in your body, feel the grief of it, feel the anger, feel the, you know, if there's any hope in there, feel whatever the feelings are coming through you. Try not to attach to too much of it. This is that kind of mindfulness thing of like, you can feel, I think there's a little bit of like a mistranslation of what we're supposed to do with our emotions therapeutically, that like you're to express them. And what I would suggest is like, no, maybe, but I think it's actually better to feel them and viscerally feel them and give yourself some compassion and space around whatever it is you're feeling. And then when that's had its process, you may have a different perspective on how to hold space for your dad and how to even approach that relationship. But right now, I think it's just you feeling your feelings. And like we said at the beginning, my own feelings feel like they're sort of layers coming off of me pretty slowly, you know, some of which I understand, some of which I don't have much understanding. It just feels like energy or sort of a vague physiological sensation. And I think we're all meant to kind of be with our experience now a little bit.
No, I totally agree. We tell people like, your feelings tell you a lot of information about what's happening inside of you, but not super accurate about what's happening outside of you.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I think it's telling me the truth of how I feel, but I know I can't get that to him. Like, that's not true. It's just a feeling.
Yep.
But it's like a very griefy feeling. You know, I'm pretty cynical about politics, and I don't have much, I don't throw my support to like, you know, the team particularly, but I know like there should be like a kind of like celebration or something at this moment, but I mostly just, you know, again, I feel relieved that, you know, there's no longer like the train off the track with a monkey. Now we got rid of the monkey, but we're still off track and we have a lot to do. I just wonder how that will pass and process.
Yeah. I don't know, sister.
Because I'm trying to do this like awake style and not just be like, mm-hmm, yeah, let's definitely have a bullshitty relationship with no depth and everyone stays up here and feels really tense. And then we leave and go, well, that was, you know, totally inauthentic. And what's the point?
Yeah.
But I don't want to have like a emotionally laden grief fest. That doesn't feel right either. So I guess there's just an amount of distance still that's just going to have to do its thing, I guess.
I mean, all of that just feels like, in a way, it's just like, if you're present with it, it's like the weather. I mean, I don't know. You might feel a lot less grief in 2 days from now. It might be 2 years. I don't really know. But it will move. You just have to breathe into it and be with it. And there will be other emotions that emerge from that. And I don't think, you know, I really do lean into this mindfulness approach here, because I do think moment to moment, it's tolerable to feel any of this. I think the big risk for people is that they tend to revert to anger instead of grief, because you can put it on something and grief can be so much more amorphous. And as you're saying, like, you don't know the beginning, you don't know the end. Most people who've lost a loved one or have experienced grief sort of know that process very well, that it kind of washes in and out. But I do think it's the more honest emotion to stay with here. No, and it's, you know, I don't think we're talking about a grief fest. I think we're talking about, like, if you're sitting with that and you feel grief, feel it. Breathe into it, have a cry, and then, like, go eat a sandwich.
Hang on. Do I have your permission that when I feel grief, I could eat a sandwich? Because that would be exquisite.
Eat a sandwich.
May we all feel our humanity, and may we all heal our humanity in that order. It's not from unintelligence that millions and millions and millions of people vote for a type like the Mad King. It's not about IQ. It's about EQ. People simply don't know how to read intelligently into emotional data. Our culture has never traditionally valued emotional intelligence, and that leaves humans rudderless at times. And we've seen what happens when humans detach from their emotional core, their central limbic systems, and go rogue. Thank you, Erica, for being my rudder and keeping me on track. Thank you, Jackie and Jeff, for producing and editing this podcast. If you liked this podcast, it's because of them, and I'll post Jackie's info in the show notes in case you're looking to birth your own art project. She's been an amazing midwife, and I am so grateful. Thank you to my mentors for sitting down with me and sharing your wisdom with all of us. Thank you, Dad, for being a good sport through all of this. I love you so much. It hurts. Thank you, guys, who tuned in to listen, who are listening now on runs, on drives, in your kitchen. People who listened twice to episodes, my God. People who subscribed and rated the show, apparently that helps the algorithm and allowed thousands of you to find this. I hope some of it was useful. Share it with people who might benefit. Hopefully some little nugget will help you in your life and increase your insight, resilience, or happiness in some way. My hope is to reach as many reasonable people as possible and build an emotionally intelligent base of reasonable people coming together for what is basically good for humans. I wish us all a peaceful transition of power and the clarity of mind to see where we're hooked. Peace.